source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Metaphysical, paranormal, you know, all those things you've been wondering about. Are you ready to go deeper into the realms of the unknown? I hope you've got your walking shoes on, because life is an adventure, and this is the journey. Come on, let's go. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Journey Radio Show. I'm Jen Cruz, your host tonight, and this is, of course, the Journey Radio Show, and we're showing up as the She Squatchers because we're going to be talking about Bigfoot, one of our favorite topics. So, of course, I've got my fellow teammate on the line, Jenna Grover. Are you there?
I'm here and happy to be here. I'm excited to talk to the guest.
Yes, and as we were jump-starting the show, our guest got lost. So I'm trying to get him back on the line. So let's just talk about what's coming up in our near future here. Let's see. We're trying to add him back into the call. I don't know why. When Jenna came on, he got dropped. So hopefully, Jenna, if you drop out when he comes on, you're just going to have to stay gone. So I'm sorry.
Oh. That's okay. I will. For Rodney, I will. I hope he heard that.
Yeah, I hope so, too. But you anyway... Okay. As we're trying to get him back, I'm just going to give some updates of what's going to go on in our I think he's there. Rodney, are you there?
I'm back. Yes.
All right. Well, when I got Jenna on, it dropped you. So I told Jenna if Rodney comes on and you get dropped, you're going to have to stay gone. She said I'd do that for Rodney.
I would. Hi, Rodney.
How are you doing? Wonderful. Doing great. Now that you're here with us, we're doing great. So I just want to tell the listeners a little bit about Rodney. We met Rodney at CryptidCon in Kentucky a few weeks back, and it was awesome. He was one of the speakers there, and he's had an aggressive Bigfoot encounter in deep in the woods, which was featured on Terror in the Woods and also Haunted, or These Woods Are Haunted on TV. And you were also in one of the Finding Bigfoot episodes, too, I believe, weren't you?
Yeah, Tom and I are both in Season 5, Episode 1, as well as my wife and my daughter are also on that episode. My wife was a skeptic who had an encounter, so they recreated her encounter on there.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So your wife also has had an encounter. I didn't know that.
Yeah, she used to think I was crazy. She used to make fun of me all the time for lying and going out in the woods with my buddy. She's like, you don't have to lie. If you want to go out in the woods with your buddy and drink, you know, you can just tell me that. And I said, no, really, I'm chasing Bigfoot.
That's hilarious.
Isn't that funny, though? I've heard other Bigfoot hunters say that their wives are getting mad that they're gone all the time. And I said, well, at least you're not at the bar chasing women. You're just out in the woods chasing the big, hairy guys. And he's like, you should tell my wife that. You should tell my wife that.
She understands now. She's actually been with me a couple of times and had more experiences. So, and she's fully aware now of why I'm there.
Nice.
Well, that's funny. I love it.
So is she addicted now?
Well, she's still, I mean, she likes to do it sometimes. She's not as full-blown into it as I am, but occasionally she does like to go with me. And there's a couple videos that we've got on our YouTube channel, Northern Kentucky Bigfoot Research Group, that she's in as well, where she was along with us.
Very good.
One of them were quite a few things were happening. We actually got something vocalized. At first it rock clacked at us, and then I picked up some rocks and clacked back. And Tom basically was kind of walking towards it, and it started to go nuts, made a bunch of vocalizations. It actually shook a tree, pushed a tree over. So we took off and got kind of back out of there because for once in our lives, we didn't have a weapon with us. And I'm not really trying to shoot Bigfoot, but if it tries to rip my arms off, I may have to defend myself.
Yeah, that's totally understandable.
Well, I saw the episode where you were on Terror in the Woods, and that really kind of creeped me out. And I probably shouldn't have done this, but we were on a trip to Kansas City, and on our way back, we were going to be doing some squatching in some remote areas. And the first night we got rained out, it was a really, really bad storm, so we ended up in a hotel rather than in a tent in the tornadoes. And we had one of our teammates' daughters along for the first time. She was 17 years old. And I'm like, well, in lieu of going here, let's watch these guys on that we know from Terror in the Woods. So we watched your episode and then the guys from Ohio Night Stalkers. And then the next night we were out camping. And I thought, probably shouldn't have done that.
Kind of creeped you out a little bit, didn't it?
Well, I was okay, but I think maybe Tammy's daughter was a little freaked.
A little freaked out. She was kind of nervous. She was like more like crazy nervous.
Right.
Yeah.
So, that was, in hindsight, I thought, yeah, I probably shouldn't have shown her that right before we were going to be out and on our lonesome in the middle of the woods and no other people in sight and in the dark all night.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably not. But, you know, it's all good fun.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, were you interested in Bigfoot before you had that encounter?
I've always been following it. Ever since I was a child, I read everything I could find, you know, pre-internet. Of course, my encounter happened in the early stages of the internet, so there wasn't Facebook or any of that. I didn't even have really a camera or anything with me, you know, because it was 2004, so... I'd always believed and thought maybe they were here, but I never really had, a real good knowledge of the names that they call Bigfoot here were actually the same thing that we were dealing with that were actually Bigfoot. We had heard the legends of the wood booger and the booger and, just whatever creatures, the goat man was close to where I grew up. So those legends were always around, but, and I'd had a few encounters over the years, but I'd always dismissed them as something human, even though in some of those situations, there's no possibility it was. And so after that encounter, it really just kind of put all that together for me. So I was able to piece it all together in my mind and go, oh, so I've had numerous, audio, like where I heard and saw something, but never really a full blown, you know, visual encounter until then. It definitely just kind of kicked it all into high gear. And of course, once you see it, it's, you can't unsee it. So that was really, just kind of started it all for me, I guess.
So I'm sure the listeners would like to hear all about that. So I know you were going to go on a camping trip. Can you take us up from the top?
Yeah. I mean, I'll rehash, a little quick outline of it, because they did such a good job of recreating it that I'll just kind of direct people to get the full details from the show, and Travel Channel is what it's on now. Mm-hmm. In fact, it may have aired this week, but it's episode 7 on there. And
These Woods Are Haunted. These Woods Are Haunted on Travel Channel?
On Travel Channel.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically, I was doing a lot of work in Eastern Kentucky in the coal mines. I'm a security guy, so we were doing a lot of camera and security work for coal mines. Coal mines had a serious problem with people stealing the mining bits and things that were in their tool sheds, mainly because those things were worth a lot of money. So there was a nice little network of black market drill bits and stuff going around. So the need for cameras became really evident to a lot of these big coal mine companies. They wanted to cut down their costs, of course. And so I had a job that was right, probably 30 miles on the other side of where I camped at, in a little town called Campton. And then that was a Friday. And so I'd put out on this forum that I was in, it was like Kentucky backpacking, hiking forum. Back then forums were really it. There wasn't much else. There was a few social networks, one called Louisville Mojo that I was a member of. And, but the actual forum was just a generic forum. And I said, And I'm going to stay over the weekend. I'm camping by myself. If anybody would like to join me, you know, meet me at the Wildcat Trailhead. And in that part of the gorge is really, it's off the beaten path. It's when you go into there, there's really no vehicles. You can only access what's called the Clifty Wilderness area by foot. And I hiked in about a mile. Two guys had showed up that were actually coming through. I think they were from North Carolina. And they were hiking what's called the Sheltowee Trace, which actually cuts through the gorge. And it's a 400 or 500 mile trail that ends up in North Carolina. And so they were going to try to, you know, hike a big chunk of that. And they met me there. And right about dark, I guess it was about 6:30 or 7. And, of course, that deep in the gorge, you don't have many hours of daylight left. It's kind of a deep holler. So we hiked in, and by the time we got there, I'd say it was about 7:30. I guess they met me about 6. And got my tent set up. We got, you know, all the dinner and fire gathering and fire started and got all that out of the way. Got camp just kind of going. And by the time we got done with all that, it was probably about 8:30. When we were just sitting around the fire, one of them had brought an acoustic guitar along. So we were just jamming, you know, talking, getting to know each other, singing some songs, drinking a little bit of bourbon that I had in my pack. And I guess maybe the noise maybe attracted it. And as we're sitting there in the middle of all that, the first rock came through and it splashes in the creek next to me. Initially, it kind of startled us, but we kind of blew that one off until about 20 minutes later when the second rock came through, and it bounced on the ground and rolled pretty much right up to the fire pit, you know, right in front of us. So at that point, we were a little on guard, and I kind of turned around and yelled up into the woods, "Hey, you expletives, what are you all doing? Stop it," kind of thing. You know, yeah. I thought it was humans that were – I figured it was probably a group of kids that were messing with us. And so that's, you know, what I expected. So as I yelled back, it made kind of a grunting sound back at us, and which, you know, caught me off guard as well. And I still wasn't really prepared for, you know, what it was. And I guess about another 15 minutes later, we had heard some commotion up on the hillside a little bit and realized that, you know, something was still around. And so then I so then I decided that I would yell again and yelled back up there and kind of just screamed in the general direction of it. "Hey, you know, what are you guys doing up there? It ain't funny anymore. Quit it." And I could see up on the hillside above me that there was a kind of an opening there, and there was this huge tree, and I noticed that something was kind of popping out from behind it, and I could almost see the shadow of a figure standing up there. And there was a little bit of moonlight that night. It wasn't probably quite a full moon, but probably close to half, and I could see the figure, and it would pop out from behind the tree, and I flip my flashlight up there and try to see what it was, and it would duck behind the tree real quick. Well, about the second time I did that, it made another large kind of vocalization at it, and which at that point really freaked out the other two guys that were there, and also freaked me out pretty well too. And you know, they were kind of, they're like,
are you still there?
Yeah, can you still hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. Yep, I'm still here. But yeah, they okay. So basically, they mentioned something like, "I don't know what we're dealing with, and I don't know who it is." And I said, "Well, you know, it's not a someone. I'm pretty sure at this point we're dealing with a something." And so basically, whatever that was, we started to realize it wasn't human. Jen there? Did she drop off?
No, I'm here. I'm here. I just turned off my video because my connection was bad. Jen, can you?
Okay. Yeah, so that's when we really started to put things together that we were dealing with something that wasn't human. And at some point, another piece of what looked like a cedar limb came slipping down through the trees and in our direction and kind of flew right past us. And then I think there was one more rock that came down, and at some point I picked it up and threw it back, which really angered it even more. Can you guys still hear me? Did I lose you?
Yes, we can.
Okay, cool.
Hear you.
Keep I couldn't going.
Know. We're
all
listening.
Right, yeah, so yeah, basically, when I threw it back, it screamed again and kind of came running down the hill towards us. However, I still couldn't really see it because the woods are so dense there. And what it sounded, you know, if I had to say what it sounded like maybe a large bull could just stomping and crunching and everything. But, you know, I could tell it wasn't on four legs. It didn't sound like it had four legs. It sounded bipedal. And it got down to, I guess, maybe 60 or 70 feet back. I was trying to see what was there. I knew it was close. I tried to hit it with my flashlight. It screamed again. And then it basically, at that point, took off up the hillside back out of sight where I couldn't see it anymore. And it made another really long vocalization, and something responded back from across the creek. So at that point, I realized there was more than one. So wow. That was quite unnerving, to say the least. So the rest, that was pretty much, it kind of quieted down for a while. I guess at that point, it ran kind of up further up the hill. You know, that's typical behavior from what I've found since then, is that the bluff charge is really kind of a scare tactic. When it doesn't work, they'll retreat for a while. So we all tried to get some sleep. The other two guys were already in the tent. They didn't want any part of this. They weren't really veteran hikers either, or outdoorsmen. This is kind of their first real attempt in being an outdoorsman. And so, you know, they were rustling around in there. I don't know if they actually slept. I decided to take first watch and just kind of stay up for a while. And, you know, I could hear something still every now and then, but it was further away. And I guess probably about 1 o'clock in the morning, I decided maybe it was safe enough to go maybe try to get a little bit of sleep. And I got in my tent, laid down for a while, but I never really fully slept. I was kind of sleeping with one eye open. And, you know, basically, I guess I kind of fell asleep, and somewhere, I'm thinking it was probably 2:30 or 3 in the morning, I heard some commotion down after I made dinner and stuff. I took my pans down by the creek and scrubbed them all out and just kind of left them there soaking. Well, I heard something down there messing with my cookware, and, you know, I assumed it was probably a raccoon. They're pretty common there. Possibly even a bear. Of course, at that time, there really weren't a lot of bear back in that area, but there are now. So I jumped up and looked through the mesh in the top of my tent, and I could see something fairly large down there, but it was kind of hunched over, and I grabbed my flashlight, and I kind of screamed at it and hit it with the flashlight right when it turned around, and basically I hit it square in the face with that beam, and it seemed like an eternity, but it was probably more like 10 seconds. It just kind of snarled at me and kind of showed its teeth, made this huge grunting scream sound, and threw my pans down, and it took off again. And it was probably about, I would say, 40 yards from me, but I could see it fairly clear. Enough to know that I was dealing with a Sasquatch. And, you know, its face, I could tell from what I saw that it looked more man-like than it did ape-like. Had a really wide, flat nose, not much in the way of a neck. It was basically a head on top of some really broad shoulders. And when it stood up and took off, you know, it was immense. I just got a big glimpse of the size for a second. And, of course, the rest of the night after that, I didn't really sleep at all. I actually just kept standing around the fire until I just couldn't hold my eyes open. Finally went and laid back in the tent probably at 4:30 or so and got a couple of hours of sleep. And it seemed to have left us alone at that point, finally. Of course, the next morning when I wake up to the sound of the other guys breaking down their gear and getting ready to get out of there. They're hitting the road. So I jump out of my tent and basically, you know, the show kind of portrayed me as upset with them for leaving, but I really wasn't. I understood why they wanted to get out of there. And I basically told them, look, you guys want to go on, you can. I'm going to break down the rest of my stuff, and I'll be heading out of here too. So they walked down a little bit, and actually they didn't go far. They kind of waited for me about halfway down the trail and kind of out of the area, I guess, where they felt safe. And I caught up to them probably 45 minutes to an hour later. I hiked back out of there, and they went their separate ways, and that was really the last I ever saw them. I never really knew their full names or anything. All I knew them, you know, John and Chris, I believe, were their names. And one was a lawyer. The other one was some kind of professional guy. And I don't know that they ever finished the trail or if they ever really pursued any of their hiking endeavors again. So I was never able really to keep contact with them. It wasn't much longer after that I think I went out on a spell where I didn't have internet at home, and the forum kind of fell by the wayside, and then MySpace happened. And so that's where I was pretty much focusing my social media efforts on MySpace at that point, and promoting my band and things of that nature, and never really caught up with those guys again. They never were really active on the forum anymore. So I'm not really sure what became of them, but I'm pretty sure that they never forgot about that experience.
No, I bet not. You know, when I was watching the show and I saw that they were packing up and leaving you behind, I thought, how terrible is that? They should at least wait for you.
Yeah, I mean, and they did. They weren't really, I don't think they were going to leave. They were just, you know, they were ready to go. And so I got up pretty much, and I mean, I understood. It was pretty terrifying. And I've spent a lot of time in the woods. I'm a little more accustomed to things than they probably were. I was nearly an Eagle Scout. Basically, I made Eagle, and had all the requirements done for Eagle, but I never got my Eagle Scout because I was already 18 at the time, and it's something you have to do before you turn 18 to get the full thing. So I had done a lot of camping my whole life. My parents always took me there. I grew up on a dead-end street, and behind me was several thousand acres attached to a city park that was, back then, it was pretty far out in the country. So I spent a lot of time in the woods. And I guess I was more comfortable there than they were.
It sounds like it, that's for sure. You took a couple city people in the woods with you.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, they were definitely city guys.
Wow. I wonder if they've seen you on TV since then telling the story. That would be an interesting thing to find out.
Yeah, I've been wondering too. I've been kind of waiting to see if maybe one of them would contact me. But, you know, it's hard to say. They were much older than me as well. So, you know, there's really, I guess at the time I was probably close to 35, and I would say they were in their 50s. Okay. So who knows? They could still be living. They could not be. I don't really know.
Wow. Interesting stuff. In the chat room, somebody was asking about when they throw rocks, are they aiming to hit or just to scare you off? What do you think?
Well, in certain situations, they're definitely aiming to hit. My partner Tom and I have been hit numerous times. In fact, Tom was hit once with a fairly large tree branch, hard enough that it drew blood. And he was also hit square in the chest with a walnut one day, pretty much right in the sternum, enough that he was bruised there for a couple of days. So I don't think they're trying to kill, but they're definitely, in some cases, trying to hit.
Wow. Well, I guess we haven't encountered ones where they were actually trying to hit us. It was very obvious they were just trying to throw it towards us. Because I think that they could have easily hit us if they wanted to. But it just seemed like they were intentionally throwing them at our, you know, to drop by our feet.
Yeah, I think they I'm not really sure if they're trying to run you off or if they just want you to know they're there. In some cases, I feel that their actions are more aggressive than others. Probably if we're near maybe a place where they habitate or possibly near a place where they hunt, you know, maybe near their food. And that's a natural reaction for any creature, I would say.
Right, right. Exactly, exactly.
Any creature that has hands and is able to throw things.
Which is quite shocking, to tell you. The very first time it happened to me, when I started out looking for Bigfoot, I didn't know very much about Bigfoot. I did an interview on the radio with Lauren Coleman, and it was his idea to send women in the woods without men, dogs, and guns. So we did. And I didn't know a whole lot about Bigfoot, didn't even really believe in Bigfoot the first time I went out to see what was out there. So and then there were rocks, and I was kind of in shock because I didn't even know that they were known to throw rocks.
Oh, yeah.
I just knew that there's nothing in the woods that does this, so what the heck is going on here?
Yeah, they'll definitely throw rocks and sticks as well, a lot of times they'll break pieces of tree branch off and chuck those at you as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty unnerving sometimes, for sure. But now I enjoy it. That's one of the things I look forward to when I'm in the woods, because I know if that's going to start happening, it's going to be an active night. We were actually out last Friday and caught, Tom had put together a little expedition with a few new people that had, wanted to join us that we met at CryptidCon. We actually had 86 people respond and had to tell them, look, we're going to go with the first five. Because with the people in our group and about five others, it's really about all you could fit in the area we go in. It's pretty rugged in there. It's not a huge flat spot to camp. So there's really not room to do a large group. And I personally feel that the larger the group is, probably the less your chances are for some serious activity. So we're going to try to break it down and take people on, like the next expedition we do in October, we'll take, five different people with us probably.
Well, that makes sense. That makes sense. I agree. Yeah. Too many people, it just doesn't work. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah, I mean, for a long time, I was just couldn't really find my niche as far as my groups, and I was traveling pretty far and going to a spot down in Kentucky called the Bernheim Forest and squatching down there quite a bit. And then I guess about early 2013, somebody had gave me a video and I posted it, and the video was here in Trimble County. And Thomas Shea responded and said, hey, I'm a researcher and I'm in Trimble County. And I met up with Tom, and the chemistry was great. He didn't know what to think of me at first. You know, I show up with tattoos and all my earrings in, and he's like, oh man, look like a biker or something, you know? And Tom's like, I don't know what this guy's going to be like, you know? But, the chemistry was great. Tom and I have a really good chemistry together. He's just so focused and serious, and he's just got so much evidence that he's accumulated. Tom's got the largest footprint collection, casted footprints that I've ever seen. In fact, Cliff Berrickman and Bobo both said that it's probably the largest one they've ever seen as well. And we've had them verified by Jeff Meldrum that they're definitely legit and in the line with some of the things that he's received as well from the other side of the country.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's really, what's going on now is the Northern Kentucky Bigfoot Research Group is still trying to pursue our methods and provide that evidence. And we got an announcement coming real soon. I can't reveal it tonight, but anybody that wants to follow us, Northern Kentucky Bigfoot Research Group on YouTube, Facebook, and both those names on both those places, it's the same name. We're going to announce it as soon as we're able to, but we've got some really cool stuff in the works. It's quite a huge announcement. So we're really looking forward to that.
Ooh. Well, on that note, we have to take our little half the show break here. So stay tuned, everybody. We'll be back in 2 minutes with Rodney Adams.
I am horror author James Hershey Jr. from the Staring Into the Abyss radio show. Check out the book that started it all. What critics called the scariest book of the year. I am Legion. And if you're still breathing, check out the other two books in the series. The Surrogate of Souls and The Rise of the Revenant. These books will scare the hell out of you. That, I promise.
In order for the light to shine so brightly, the darkness must be present. Tune in every Monday at 10 o'clock for Dark Sun Rising on the Para-X Radio Network.
Nights at midnight on the Staring Into the Abyss radio show. Come, get lost with us.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. This is the Journey Radio Show, and I'm Jen Cruz. And we're showing up as the She Squatchers. When we are not on the air live like we are right now, you can find us at TheJourneyRadioShow.com. And hey, check out our website at SheSquatchers.com. And you'll want to click on our events page to see where we're going to be soon, because we are traveling a lot still. We're on our tour, I guess. We're on a tour. And just to give you a quick update of where we're going to be, October 6th, we'll be at the I Outran, the Hairy Man Marathon. And that's in Virgis, Minnesota. We'll be speaking after the race at 6 p.m. talking about Bigfoot in Minnesota. And we'll take question and answers after that. Then the following weekend on October 11th and 12th, we will be at the Paracon in Minnesota, at Menomon, Minnesota. And that's sure to be a good time. So we'll be there to answer all your Bigfoot questions and talk Bigfoot. And then our big event on October 19th and 20th will be in Kingsport, Tennessee for the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference. And hey, we're giving a two-hour presentation on Friday the 19th of October there. And those who have VIP tickets will get to attend the exclusive VIP party that evening, where you get to do the meet and greet and hang out with all of the speakers and celebrities there that are going to be there. So if you want to get your VIP tickets while you still can, they're only $35, and they include a two-day pass to the event, a T-shirt, and an autographed book by us. We'll autograph it, although it's not our book. We're just featured in the book, Bigfoot Explorers. So get on that. You want to go to BigfootDay.com and click on the VIP section so you can get those tickets while you still can. So here we are tonight with Rodney Adams. He is a Bigfoot researcher out of Kentucky, and he's had this amazing, aggressive Bigfoot encounter, which has pretty much got him hooked on the whole deal. Right, Rodney?
Oh, yeah. Definitely got me hooked. I've had a couple of visual encounters since then as well with Tom. And Tom actually had probably one of the best encounters that I've heard in a while, too. You guys will need to get with him probably and let him tell the story of. He was casting a footprint. Actually, it was one of the ones we had on display. It may have even been, actually it wasn't the Goliath print, which is our largest one, but it was one of the others. And while he was casting, he smelled something, but didn't really pay attention. He was kind of involved in what he was doing. And he happened to turn around, and directly behind him, probably 30 feet away, was a large, probably male Sasquatch, a reddish color, standing there looking right at him. And he just kind of stood there, looked over at his four-wheeler and realized his weapon was probably 20 feet away. So he wasn't going to try to get up and go grab his 44 or 45, I think is what he had on the four-wheeler. And he thought, basically he whipped his phone out and was trying to record it as it walked off. And he thought for sure he had that video. He even called me. I was at Walmart, actually, with my wife. He called me and said, I got it. I got a video. And we were so hyped. And, well, he got home and reviewed it and realized that in the commotion, the camera was flipped to the reverse camera, and he was filming himself. But you can actually hear the footsteps of the creature walking off. So, yeah, it's pretty intense. And in that same area, probably 4 days later, we were in there with we had one other guy with us, two other guys with us. And we came across, well, I guess we disturbed something, and it jumped up and took off running. And it was actually much smaller than what I'd seen. It was probably more like 6.5 foot, and it was thinner. But it moved so fast that it ran around the ridge in a matter of seconds. And I would say it was running at a speed close to maybe 20 miles an hour. And it was basically propelling itself with like saplings the whole way, just grabbing trees and using them to kind of pull itself. And the incline that it was running on was so steep. No human could have done that. Tom and I tried to go and follow it around, and it took us forever to get around the bend where it was at, and it was gone by the time we got over there. But we think that was maybe a juvenile. And we even had a guy with us that was actually our documentarian, had a camera and everything. He was so shocked. He just stood there, and we all did. And that's kind of what happens. It's so fleeting that if you don't have cameras going at all times, it's really going to be hard to catch one of these things on video. And so now we're trying to come up with scenarios where we can make that happen. So we've designed a few things that we were hoping maybe will allow us to get some video. And we're constantly running audio when we're in the woods. We've got some great vocalizations. We even captured some, basically, it's like talking, but it's what they refer to as samurai chatter. If you Google that term, you'll see that somebody else had coined that term because they said it sounded like a couple of old, like samurais or something talking. So it's basically, it kind of sounds like gibberish to us, but it's like a, it's really strange. We caught some of that in that same area one night while we were, it was actually going on in the evening, and we could hear it at a distance, but our parabolic dish microphone recorder caught it really well.
So in the chat room, people are asking, Rodney, if there's ever been a verified attack on a person by a Sasquatch.
Not that we know of. There was, of course, the historic incident that's been documented over the years. I think they called it Ape Canyon in California, where the guys were trapped in the cabin all night and large boulders were being thrown at their cabin. And one of those guys may have been injured, but we've never really had a report of a Bigfoot encounter that injured a human. There have been some other reports that came through, but the creatures that were described in those reports fell in line with more of what we would call a dog man, which I don't know a lot about the dog man. I know there's something else out there that resembles more of a werewolf from people that have described it. And, you know, I don't know what that is, but there have been a couple of documented cases in Kentucky where those things have attacked someone. And the information that comes out around those is really hush-hush. We can't get any details. One of the situations we had tried to go talk to somebody, this is actually before I was with Tom. I was with Terrell Bryant, a friend of mine down in Bullitt County. And we had tried to go interview the scene or go upon the scene of an attack. And actually there were some black SUVs there. And we were told that we were not allowed to be in that area and that this was a federal investigation. And they actually denied us access to the area.
Wow.
So, yeah, there's something out there that does attack, but I do not believe they are the same creatures. Now, whether or not they would attack if provoked, possibly, I would imagine anything would if it was in fight or flight mode or if it maybe had children around. So we've not really encountered that yet.
You know, I agree with the people in the chat room are talking about how big they are, that they could easily kill people if they wanted to. So obviously they probably aren't. They are probably more peaceful than anything. Definitely intelligent if they're not attacking us.
Right. Yeah, the thing I saw, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind, if it wanted to, it could have just ripped my arms off and beat me with them. And now that, you know, I know how big they are, I try to keep a weapon with me at all times just for self-defense. Our goal is never really to shoot and kill one. Actually, I would be more afraid of shooting one and not killing it, and then the results of what it would do afterwards.
Oh, yeah, that would be kind of scary.
And yeah,
what if they're not alone? I mean, there might be other ones there.
And we've interviewed more than one person who have shot at them.
And, really?
Yeah, we had a hunter call us last turkey season. And this guy had a hunting lease in Kentucky. He was from up in Indiana. And he was sitting in, you know, had got in there probably about 4:30 in the morning and sitting in there a while. And about dusk, he heard something walking through and kind of woke him up because he was kind of propped against a tree, kind of just sleeping a little bit. And he had thought it was probably a deer. When he looked up, he realized it was a bipedal creature. It was pretty far away from him, but it turned around and looked straight at him, kind of let him know, you're not hiding from me. I see you. And it kind of sniffed the air at him and kind of made a grunting sound and just then turned around and walked out of there. But as it turned around, he said he didn't know what to do. He had a 410 shotgun loaded with turkey shot. He actually shot it, which didn't go well. It actually came after him. He took off running, ran through tons of briar patches, dropped his rifle, ran all the way out of there. He said actually at one point he turned around and shot at it again before he dropped his rifle and just kept on going. And as soon as he got out in the woods, he went into town and was talking to somebody about it. And they immediately called Tom, who went and interviewed him. And the guy was so nervous. He was chain smoking and just all shook up. He was covered in cuts and scratches from where he had ran through briar patches to get out of there. And just with no, basically just didn't care what he was running through and just tore himself all up. Tom actually had to escort him back in there to get his rifle back because he didn't want to go back in there to get it, but he really didn't want to leave it either. Check out the area as well. But, that was also here in Trimble County. And the guy said he probably will never come back to that lease again. In fact, it terrified him pretty bad. I'm pretty sure all the story of that you can find on our, we also have a blog. It's bigfootlore.blogspot.com. That's Tom's blog that he manages. And he does a real good job of writing up the reports. That's one of the areas where I fail is I'm not real good at keeping up with the reporting. And Tom is really, really good at that. So you can look back through our archives about a year ago and see that story in there.
Wow. We're going to have to get connected with Tom. You know, when we were at Crypticon, we'd flew there and we'd planned to stay a few extra days because we were going to go squatching out at Squatchman's Hotspot. But with all the rain, you remember all the buckets of rain that were going on?
Oh, yeah. He did that this whole week as well and canceled my huge rock concert I was going to this weekend called Louder Than Life. It's been canceled because of the water.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was a big, big festival. So, yeah, it finally stopped raining today. It started basically Friday and rained and rained and rained. Yeah, bad. So, hopefully, this is not normal. Kentucky is the new Seattle this year. We've talked about rain for several years in a row, but this year's the worst that I've ever seen it.
Yeah, it was terrible. Well, he came in the last day of the conference and said he'd gone out to his hotspot. And he said, it's all flooded out. He said, everything is a muddy, mushy mess. There's no way we could tent out there. And yeah. So he canceled our camping out there. And then, so here we were kind of just stuck in town for a few days waiting for our airplane.
And, oh, yeah. Right. Who were you going to go camping with that? Was it?
We were going to go Greg camping Yost? With Squatchman. Yeah, Squatchman. Yeah,
Greg Yost, yeah.
Yeah, and he's so,
I haven't been over to his area yet, but I need to go check that out as well.
It's a good spot. We went out there last year for one night, and we got to see a lot of really cool things, and I got some really cool pictures, and it was a good time. We definitely wanted to check it out again. And so the morning after the con was over, I was down in the at the hotel having breakfast, and here comes Cliff and Bobo from Finding Bigfoot. And yeah. I told them, you know, we're kind of stuck at the hotel now because our camping trip got canceled because of all the rain. And Bobo said, well, I'll get a hold of Thomas Shea and see if he'll take you guys out. He goes, yeah. I'll tell him to get a hold of you. Well, he never did get a hold of us. So,
yeah, it was a muddy mess in there too. There's two creeks that run through there and a couple of big valleys. And you have to cross those creeks to get up to our area. And they were just raging torrents, I'm sure. And that's just one of the downfalls of being in Kentucky. Well, at least this year is we're at the mercy of the weather, and it seems that the weathermen really just all they can do around here is have an educated guess. It's it's a really hard place to predict weather for.
It really, I think that's everywhere. Everywhere is, you really don't know anymore. The poor right. weathermen, I actually feel sorry for them because it's got to be tough right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I always think, though, that, you know, if I was going to redefine my life and go back in time and do things over, I would become a weatherman just because it's really the only job where you can get away with being wrong a lot. Oh. And still have your job.
That is true.
They're really better off saying that it's going to rain because if it doesn't rain, everybody's happy.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're better off saying it's going to rain because if they say it's going to be sunny and it rains, people aren't too happy with that.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah. So what's on your agenda now? Like, what's your plan for researching? Do you get out much? I mean, what is your goal?
Yeah, I mean, I get out as often as possible. I don't get to get out as much as Tom does. Tom is retired, and he's a disabled veteran. So, you know, he spends more time being able to dedicate it to it. And me trying to work 40 hours a week, and I just do it when I can. You know, I try to do as much as I can. Wish there was some way I would be able to do it, you know, more, but it's really hard to balance that in a career as well. Cause I'm an IT guy by day and, used to also, I was in a band or playing music of some kind, but right now I've really kind of put that aside. I chased that rock and roll dream for many, many years. Actually, a video surfaced on my timeline today from one of my concerts back in 2000 at a bar that used to be in Louisville called the Phoenix Hill Tavern. So I was real thrilled to see that video pop up because I didn't know it existed. And it just hit my timeline probably about 8 o'clock tonight. And I haven't really fully watched it all, but it's pretty cool. I think it was recorded back in 2000. So it's pretty nice.
Well, you'll have to share it again so we can all see it.
Yes.
Yeah. I think I shared it probably sometime about an hour or so ago on my timeline, so it should still be pretty visible on there. I shared it basically right after I shared the link for this podcast here.
Wonderful, wonderful. That sounds great. So today I asked you on Messenger if you were going to come to the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference, and you said maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. It's Kingsport's not that far away, and it's probably, you know, 3.5 hours or so. It's within the realm of possibility, but I really don't know. Sometime in the middle of October, we're going to have another outing, and it may fall on that same weekend. You know, really depending on weather and things, of course. But, I'd like to attend a lot more of these events, but, you know, funding is always an issue, coming up with the money to go there.
I hear you. So I'm just going to say, if you come, we're hosting a Bigfoot calling contest on Saturday.
Oh, nice.
And we like to do that when we're at events, if we can. When we just had one at the Bigfoot Music Festival, and we've invented a new category of Bigfoot calling. We're doing the Bigfoot mating call category.
Oh, nice.
And since we probably don't know what a Bigfoot mating call sounds like, people get real creative.
Oh, my goodness. More than creative. We have to, if we shared this video from the last event, we would have to rate it R. So I'm just saying.
It's definitely entertaining. So we have an authentic Bigfoot call. That's a category. Then we have the Bigfoot mating call category. And then we have a kids only category. So if you make it, you're going to have to participate in our calling contest.
Yeah, definitely.
It'll be a good time.
You never know what I'll come up with.
Yes, I know. You got great pipes because you were singing like crazy at the karaoke party at Crypticon.
Yeah, I got to keep my voice in shape since I don't do it professionally anymore. So karaoke's my outlet.
I have to say you are awesome. If oh my gosh, do you have any music out there that like anybody could listen to so they could hear you singing? Because wow, I was stunned. I was like, what?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I definitely have some. You can find some of my stuff on Facebook as well. And Reverb Nation, there's quite a few of my songs on there. Reverb Nation, E-flat is the band. If you search E-flat and then put the little phrase behind it, the Foul Mouth Hooligans, which is one of the nicknames we earned back in the day, that band is actually, we were a kind of a hybrid fusion of rap metal and maybe a little punk. So it was all the things I grew up on just kind of thrown together. And of course, later in my career, I started focusing more on actually using my voice in a broader sense than just the rap punk kind of style. But so that my last album that we did in 2010 is actually more singing involved. And that record, there's quite a few songs from that on Reverb Nation. I'm actually in the process of putting them all on Spotify now. I've got a discology that goes back to about 1998. Actually, I've got a hip-hop CD I did before that in 94 when I had a record deal in Chicago. So I started out my career doing rap, and I wanted to be Eminem before there was an Eminem, before I knew who he was. Mm-hmm. I was doing the same thing, really. And my career kind of paralleled Kid Rock's, and who I've actually opened up for a couple times.
Nice.
Because back in the day, Kid Rock was in the same path that I was. Of course, you know, we had crossed paths a couple times in his early days when he still had the flat top and everything. And, of course, then I met him later on. We opened up for him on the first leg of the tour that made him so huge, the Devil Without a Cause tour. And, it's pretty fun run, but you know, I gave it 20 years, actually probably longer than 20 years of my life. And yeah, at this point, I've decided that I'm probably too old to keep that going. But you know, I'm gonna still sing. I'm working on some music now, but don't really have a whole lot on Spotify or any of those services yet. But I'm working on that now, so to speak.
Very cool.
So, do you ever just go out in the woods and start singing to see if Bigfoot will react to that?
Actually, I've actually done that and made some other strange sounds and got reactions to things that you would never expect to get a reaction to. Actually, one day my stomach was growling really loudly and something reacted to that. And Tom was just laughing. It was kind of, we actually got bluff charged not long after that. And we got that on audio as well. And one of the first times I actually seen Tom actually pull his weapon out because we were so intimidated by this bluff charge. And That video, that audio is probably on our Blogspot site as well. Bigfootlore.blogspot.com. And you can find some of that there. I'll reshare some more on our Northern Kentucky Bigfoot Research page. We share quite a bit of audio on there. But yeah, I've done some things like just I screamed like Tarzan once and got a response. And we don't do a whole lot of calling or tree knocking anymore. We find in our area that seems to run them out of there. Anymore, we get more response from just whistling, making little whistle sounds like those kind of things. And believe it or not, we get more response that way than any other way, it seems.
Somebody posted a link in the chat room asking if these guys were you, but I don't think it is.
Yeah, there's another E-flat from India somewhere that,
yeah.
So that what keeps was getting mixed up into my links and stuff. But if you want one way to find me, years ago there was a little internet phenomenon called the bed intruder. I don't know if you ever heard that thing. It was pretty funny, where they had taken basically some guys off of a newscast and put them to music. And climbing in your windows.
Okay, no singing.
Yeah.
But, a little singing on the network.
Yeah. But so that was the gist of it. But we did a cover of that. And so that you can find that on my YouTube channel. And if you search E flat, sometimes you have to search E dash flat is the best way to find it. And then type in Louisville, Kentucky behind it or something along those lines. Because there is another E flat in India. And I've actually talked to those guys, and their music is totally different style.
Yeah. Well, I found you on Reverb Nation and shared the link in our chat room, and everybody's saying they're going to check you out.
Oh, okay. Cool. Thank you.
Maybe you'll have a big comeback now.
Yeah, maybe.
That would I'll rock. Just fingers. Remember us little people when you're famous.
Yeah.
Right? Not just Bigfoot famous, but everywhere famous.
Yes, I agree. Please. So we can say, look, he knows us. He knows us.
Right? Well, hey, we're coming to the end of the show. Do you want to tell people where they can find you online so they can get in touch with you if they'd like to?
Yeah, definitely. You can find me on YouTube. It's our best way to probably find me. I do have a Rodney Adams channel on YouTube as well. And, of course, that's my name on Facebook. You can't miss me because it's got a little crazy. Just if you type in Rodney Adams from Louisville, Kentucky, there's actually one more of me. But mine's either a really funny face or it's a picture of me holding an alligator, one of those two. But you can also find us, Northern Kentucky Bigfoot Research Group. It's the best way, probably easiest way to find me. Join our group. And then follow us on YouTube. We're looking to get as many followers on YouTube as we can. Of course, they've changed the way that ad settings work and things of that nature. And you really have to have a lot of subscribers to really do anything substantial on there now. So, and then of course on our blog, bigfootlore.blogspot.com, you can also reach me on there. My email address is on there as well. They can get me at rodneyiscool@gmail.com.
Perfect. Well, that sounds great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight, Rodney. We have to say goodnight to you, and thank you so much to everybody. Please see you next week when we're on the show again. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.